Hello, this is Bobby Dooley, and you're listening to the Story Worthy Podcast with your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Thinney. And I'm just, you know what? There's a little bit of streaking going on, so I've got to change.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Thinney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. I am Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Thinney. We're coming to you from Jumbo's Clown Room on Hollywood Boulevard.
Have you been to Jumbo's, Hannes?
I have, in fact, not. I know that you have, I believe.
It
is amateur strippers.
It's a strip club. It's a regular strip club, but they do have amateur nights.
I don't know. That sounds like an open mic gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Well, how else would you learn, though? Where would you learn your craft?
Well, now, you know, it's funny you would say that, because in the old days, who would know how to dance on a pole? But now, very rich women in Beverly Hills pay good money
to take
classes to learn how to basically act like a stripper,
who they
would never allow into their home.
It's
so it's a little bit of a dichotomy.
It's a skill. Hannes, are you done?
No.
The guest tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the guest, the master himself, he's a genius, ladies and gentlemen. What else can I say? Phil Hendry is here.
Phil Hendry said to our sound engineer, Roy Race, do you have a level set? And I wanted to say, you know what? All microphones are set to Phil Hendry's level.
Oh, that's
good,
automatically,
Hannes. That's the way they test them. In the microphone store, is there like they play Phil Hendry and they go, well, now it works okay.
When did you discover Phil Hendry, Hannes?
Coming to LA. I mean, you know, Phil, I mean, everybody who's listening to this is obviously going to have heard him. And if there by some chance you haven't heard him, then you just look through the interweb and you will find him. And yeah, he's fantastic.
Hannes, if they don't know who Phil Hendry is, they're out of my life.
Wow.
Listen, I've been listening to him for 15 years since I've been in LA, and I know he started as a regular DJ, and then he's moved on, and now he's evolved in an absolute mastermind. He does characters, he eggs on people. Basically, he's satirizing talk radio. Basically, like, I've always been a talk radio fan. I'm a huge Larry King fan.
He's satirizing it from the inside.
Yeah, I'm a big
Larry. He's not talking about how weird it is.
No.
He's literally demonstrating to you.
Right.
That is
in other words,
insane.
In Phil Hendry's world, there are callers, and then there are listeners. Before we get our fill of Phil, I do want to mention this. Amazon.com.
Amazon.com.
Look, you go over to our website, folks, storyworthypodcast.com. You click on our Amazon ad, and then you shop as regular. This is nothing we don't know about. We
know
this.
And then we make a few shekels, and we get a list of what was bought. We do not know who's bought what.
No.
So this is important. So you can buy all your embarrassing items that you need from Amazon.com. We won't know that you bought them.
That's right.
We will know that they were bought by some of our really decrepit listeners. Not decrepit. What's the word of it?
I like decrepit.
Decrepit is, yeah, actually, I'm feeling pretty decrepit
nowadays. If you want to support our show, that's the best way to do it. Go to Amazon.com through storyworthypodcast.com. If you don't want to do that, let's say you don't shop at Amazon. Let's say you
live you're a communist.
In caveman times. Right.
Right.
Then you can just go over to iTunes. You leave us a good review. We also appreciate that.
Yes, that helps us move up the scale.
As it were.
Yes, up the ladder.
All right, Hannes. Well, the good news is this. We have a guest tonight, and he's going to tell us his story about
women. Women to us.
He
said, I will explain everything about women that there is to know. You will not need to know anything else after this, and you can be happy.
All right, you guys, stay tuned, because Phil Hendry is on his way up.
Storyworthy tweets. So join us on Twitter and be our friend on Facebook.
Hi, this is Phil Hendry. You're listening to the Storyworthy Podcast with Christine Blackburn and Hannes Thinney. We'll be right back.
Next week on Storyworthy, join us for Penelope Lombard.
Where is my yurt?
Next week on Storyworthy. And we're back. We're now, we are upstairs at Jumbo's Clown Room. Phil Hendry has ascended the spiral staircase. This actually resembles to me the old Dean Martin show from the 70s. Remember that? He would come up and down a spiral staircase and then he would sing a song. That's kind of what it looks like. There's a lot of shag carpeting. There's a lot of pastels. And also, it smells like 1973 in here.
Jumbo's Clown Room. Well, because they allow smoking. In most places,
smoking,
they don't.
And they serve only Schlitz malt liquor.
Schlitz? There's sand in your what? Ladies and gentlemen.
You know what the best beer from old beer from Milwaukee ever was?
Old Blatt's. Milwaukee.
No, Blatt's. Because Blatt's, as the old joke goes, Blatt's sounded like the sound you would make vomiting after you have drunk too many Blatt's. Blatt's! And it would hit the ground.
That what was... about Milwaukee's Best? Remember that
Milwaukee's
one?
Milwaukee's Best. First of all, that fucking beer was made in Detroit, okay?
Oh, my
so
gosh.
Don't even fucking tell me about Milwaukee's Best, which is the shittiest beer in the world. What you're looking for is red, white, and blue. Joe, back me up. No, not PBR. There was also a beer, actually, I think, made by Pabst, which was below Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Was it Buckhorn?
It was called, no, it was called Red, White, and Blue.
Oh,
that's what it was called.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a real big treat here tonight. Phil Hendry, he is here, folks. He's an actor. Think ABC's Modern Family. Boy, did I love seeing him on there, Hannes. Did you see the Modern Family? He played Booker Bell. He had a scene with Ed O'Neill.
Unbelievable. He was doing all the things, and the father comes in, and he's just obsessed with him from the old days.
Yeah, it was a great scene. He's also been on Fox's New Girl. That's another new show that he's been on.
I bet he's been Fox's New Girl.
And Napoleon Dynamite, the television show. Now, think on the big screen. Think about Semi-Pro, Team America, World Police. How about that?
He's America.
He's also a writer.
Fuck yeah.
That's right. He's also a voiceover artist. Think Futurama. He's done lots of voices for Futurama. And, of course, he's best known as a radio satirist. How do you say satirist?
Satirist.
And the host of The Phil Hendry Show. It's a nationally syndicated radio show heard on over 100 stations, and it is driven by his cast of fictional characters, all of whom he created and he plays on air. Now, as the host, Phil sets up the topic and he discusses it with one of his characters, who he seamlessly takes the discussion beyond obvious social parameters. And this is where it gets funny. This is where you are either a listener or you are a caller. You are either incensed or you are amazingly entertained.
Right.
And of course, you can find him at philhendryshow.com. Yay. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, put your hands together for Phil Hendry.
Thank you. Thank you. The story that I was led to starting it out this way by Hans, you mentioned, is Phil going to tell us everything he knows about women? And yes, am I an expert? Yeah, I am an expert. But you also have to be an expert on yourself to be an expert on women. You have to be an expert, and you have to be heterosexual, I guess, because that's where I'm coming from. Although you could be gay and be an expert on women, and that would make you okay. A hairdresser, right? See how I fell into that? But I think that I know the women have been my downfall and my up fly. I was trying to find the opposite of downfall, and that is what it is. When you fall, you either fall or fly. So my up fly, which also references my zipper, has been women, but they've been my downfall. When I was born, I had a mother, and I tried to please my mother like all men do. My mother let me down, as sometimes mothers will, and I continued into the world trying to find my mother again to please her, only my mother is now old, so I don't want to have sex with her. At one time I did, but I don't anymore, and so I would find women to be my mom, which guys will not deny that this is true, but it is absolutely true. And what did I try to do? I tried to take care of them. I tried to take care of them because that's how you get love from your mother. And in taking care of women, I began to hate myself. Because when you take care of people, when you become a caretaker, you sort of become more of a son, more of almost a eunuch than you do a lover and a man. And so my self-loathing turned into, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to just come at it where I really want to come at it from, which is sex. But still, the boy wanting to please the mother is there. And so you become a performer sexually. And then you get overloaded and you want nothing more to do with women. Until you find, is this interesting at all? I can't imagine anybody's listening to this shit at all, man. I would turn this off and within 4 hours. No, so anyway, finally I did meet a woman who I could be sexual with, and she was my mother, and I could take care of her. And not only that, she had 4 children, exactly the number of kids that were in my family when my family split up because of the divorce of my parents. And I was living large. And I was also hitting a stride in my career where I was making a lot of money. So every dream I ever had of a family, which was huge Christmases with big, gigantic Christmas trees, great sex with a beautiful wife, kids that I could go out on Saturdays with and go toy shopping. I mean, my greatest joy the first 2 years that we were married was to go online and buy toys at Christmas time. And that was the best Christmas I think I can ever remember, that first Christmas we were together, because I just loaded up the tree and I had all kinds of money. Well, here's the problem with all of this, guys. When you go to repair your birth family by substituting people for mom, for your dad, for your siblings, you are blinded to who those people really are that you're marrying into. So my wife is somebody else. She's not my mother. And the four children are somebody else. They're not my kids. So you get into that thing where people will start to hate you because they're saying, you're not treating me the way who I am. You're right. But then you're not treating me the way who I want to be treated, because I've got this whole family thing I'm working out. And of course, they're working their shit out. This was a disastrous marriage for me. And it ended not only with the death of my marriage and with the death of a family, but also the death of my career, because it became such an onerous thing that I literally lost my interest for work, and I lost my ability to show up and actually do the things that that Christine so generously described, you know, which I'm not sure what she said about me, but I'm a mortician, and I do. What did she say? Oh, radio show. Yeah. So no, I know, but that Christine was very generous in describing, but all of that went away. And not only did all of it go away, but because I didn't really see these people as they really were, I wound up really getting, you know, taken to the cleaners. And it's been 6 years that I have been rebuilding not only a career and a life, but also finding out all this shit that I'm telling you about right now. So what's left? What's left is, I know the downfall part of women. Now I got to know the part of getting rid of all that shit, letting somebody take care of me for a change, as opposed to me taking care of them, and seeing someone for who they really are, as opposed to... Now, that may sound like stuff that you would do when you're talking about male friends as well, but this is pretty unique to women, because there's a dynamic involved called sex, which to men is super important, and to women it is too, you know, but for us, it's part of our expression, and it's part of the way we express our love to a woman by saying to her, you know, I am the He-Man, and I will help you nest, and why don't we get started on that baby thing if sooner rather than later. And that's what we do. And besides, that's how we were trained by women. Because going all the way back to the very beginning of our species, females rewarded the male who was able to feather the nest. That's why we walk on two legs, and I can go into that whole story. There's a reason why we walk on two legs and not four. Our species realized that because we were increasing our intelligence, we could gather things with these two limbs. We didn't need to walk on them. The female reacted to that because that's more shit that he's bringing back to the nest. I want that male. That's all I have to say about that, Ms. Blackburn. I hope that is okay.
Wow.
I'm going to go.
Wait, you have me.
I got to go home now, but I appreciate... Oh,
but
I
wait,
do?
No, you have me. Wait, so the female...
Well, I want you.
...says that the male, he's walking on two legs.
Yeah.
He has two hands, so now he can do more hunting and gathering.
He can do more gathering.
While she pads the nest.
Yes, and he can bring back things for the nest.
But she also walks...
He can go to IKEA.
He can go to IKEA, exactly.
IKEA did actually exist during caveman times. I don't know if you're aware. That's how old IKEA is.
But she walks on 2 feet. But now she has two hands, so what are you saying? In other
Carry the young...
Carry the young, maybe, but paint on the cave walls. Yeah.
There's a whole reason why species evolve.
Yeah.
We don't just say, oh, it's time for us to be on two legs because that would look cool.
No,
We actually look really stupid in nature. We're the only creature to walk on two limbs. It's pretty. If you look at the world, humans
look ridiculous.
All
the other everybody else carries things in their mouth.
So there was a reason. And the reason why we kept saying, let's do the two-leg thing, is because the female, at least for the male, was fucking us more. We were bringing more shit back. They're fucking us more. Baby, family. Ah, now I'm happy.
Religion.
Here's my babies. Here's my family. Well, as you get more children and as you get more population, you obviously have the ability to feed them and you have the ability to take care of them. So people get bored and they want to start thinking about shit and they go, gee, how did I get here?
Right.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so we're so self-important. We're so self-centered that we're like, you know what? We must have been created in the image of God, and this must be the center of the whole universe. But remember when they thought the Earth, the sun revolved around the Earth, and
I would only say, I would only add one thing, Hans, that I don't think we started out saying, aren't I great? I think religion became a product of the fact that, oh, wow, farming, we don't have to hunt and gather. All right, now we have farms, we're growing food. Guess what? What? We can feed a lot of people. You mean now we can have more than one kid, because if you're hunting and gathering, you can't have six kids.
Right.
So now there's more people. And now there needs to be bureaucracy. Oh, let's protect the crops. We need a military. We need to have a king. And now with the leisure time comes, actually, there was spirituality even with the hunters and gatherers, you know, because they had no control over the environment. And they, how do I?
Right. What they would just look at the stars. They worship, literally worship the sun.
It's almost in our DNA to believe in a spiritual thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I but think the single God thing, that's Moses. That's, well, the Jews did that. But, you know, what are you going to do? I'm joking. Everybody, you know I'm kidding.
One of the favorite things I used to, I remember listening to your show. This is like 98, 99, 2000. Mm-hmm. Was you would talk about you and your ex-wife and what you bought at the grocery store that week.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that bit.
Yeah, I know. It's and a lot of people did.
And that was just very normal.
Yeah.
But it's like I heard you saying the list, and then I'm checking them off in my head.
Do I have that stuff? Yeah.
Bought that.
Right.
Bought
that's an example of being like being specific, which somehow becomes general. It's like everybody just falls into that. Can I just say that I wrote down a note here, not seeing people as they really are. See, that's what I was trying to say as I stumbled and fumbled about mind reading and people not knowing what's going on in your head. That's me. He, of course, said it perfectly. That's exactly what I was trying to say is like, you may not be looking at them the way they really are, and they're not looking at you the way they really are.
Right.
And neither one of you has a negative intention, but eventually it doesn't work. I'm demonstrating with my fingers as a gear, which is podcast gold.
That is gold right there.
Right.
Just put a picture up of my fingers.
But I think, you know, that's a very true thing that you just said, and it's true of the opposite. So when I look at my ex, she looked at me and said, this is not quite what I had in mind. I was a very insular guy. I'm like you, Christine. I'm an artist, so I spend a lot of time alone. I don't know about other people, but I got to have time to myself.
Right.
And it was not a good thing for a family with four kids.
Four kids. You are still in contact with the kids.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I just had my son, Alex, on the phone as we talked about the famous.
Yes, we have to say that we missed some podcast gold because as Phil came in, he said, I just lost my wallet.
Yeah.
He was crying. He was screaming. We consoled him. We gave him some cocaine so he would calm down because it's show business. And eventually his son called and had gone to the gas station and had found
the wallet.
That's huge.
Thing. And then he was talking to the woman behind the desk who you could barely understand on his speakerphone, and I'm like, why are we not recording this? This is fantastic. Because you said, this is Phil Hendry, and I'll be coming by to pick up my wallet later. And I'm sure she went, wait a minute, am I on the air? What the hell is going on?
I think she said
like
it was more like this.
Uh-huh. That's fine. I'm off at 10:30.
I just said I'm Phil Hendry.
That's good for you.
Good for you.
Whatever, Blanco. Hey, we don't care. Hey,
you want to come in and take this? I'm nut.
And then she says, and I'm going to need some ID when you get here.
Exactly.
But you have my ID.
You have my ID. Well, she says she'll look at the picture, which I think.
Which I think is actually smart on their point because they shouldn't. I don't think they should just give it to yourself.
Well, that was Alex. He was very disappointed. He says, hi, I found the wallet. I go, yeah, that's great, man. They won't give it to me. You know?
What a good boy.
Yeah, what a good boy. Yeah.
Let me ask you, though. Your marriage fell apart, and then you lost interest. This is huge.
Yeah.
This was a huge point.
Is this
when you quit working at KFI the first time?
No. This is the second, 2006, when I left Clear Channel, and I left
Premiere. You left the whole thing. And then, but I thought it was because you wanted to be more concentrating on your acting and the teacher sitcom and
I think it was I felt like I needed a huge change.
Were you trying to take it to another level or were you trying to get out?
I was trying to get out. I was trying to get free of a lot of stuff. I was trying to get free of great disappointment I had in my radio. What I do is really difficult. It's physical as well as mental. Mm-hmm. And to do it every night and to have sort of a difficult time. You know, it's a very strange kind of radio show. It's not easy to sell, not easy to affiliate. It really needed a lot more of me in the business side. And I had given over all of that to a lot of people. So by the time our marriage was gone, my show was doing one of these. Clear Channel didn't want to renew my contract. And so I just said, I'm going to go into acting and F the radio thing.
Wow.
Yeah, and within a year, I was bored to tears, and I wanted to get back on the air, though.
Because you're such a radio guy. Now, the show that you do, for people out there that don't know, it's Phil. He's
a one-man
show.
There's Betty, and their son, Jim. That's the only three people in America who don't know.
What's happening, Honest?
They live in 1956.
Yeah, and that's, that's a 56 names,
yeah,
too.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But the thing is, your show, so you're playing the different characters.
Yeah.
You're calling in. Sometimes you're an additional person. Sometimes you're calling it. So there's kind of layer upon layer upon layer. And I remember years ago, to make some money, I would call into the Man Cow Show out of Chicago, and I would give what they call a clam, or like a little, to try to get people, incense them to call in. So I would call in at like 4:30 in the morning, and they'd put me on hold, and then the producer would come on and say, okay, you're on the air, and then they would give me this ridiculous story that I was supposed to say to get people to call in.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you're sort of doing that. But you're doing it all on your own.
Yeah, well, I mean, now the radio deal I've got right now is with a company that I don't like very much. And the stations are so small that the callers are few and far between. So now I'm just really going in and out of character and doing sketch comedy. And that's a whole story I can get into. But the fact is, when you're duping radio callers, and what you do is you're into character. And I've got a number of... I have a character named Bobby Dooley.
I love Bobby.
I have a character named Margaret Gray. I have one named Dean Wheeler, who talks like this. And I've got Doug Danger, who's a gay man and a gay journalist. I've got Vernon Dozier, who's a high school football coach. And I've got a guy by the name of Steve Bozell. And you know, my feelings are very hurt by what you just said. You know, the guy's got, you know, he's chicken shit. And
now, Margaret Gray and Bobby Dooley.
Yes.
These are women.
These
who,
are women.
These sound like your mother. Are these your, this
these
is your
are
mother.
My mother. They are my mother. They're both aspects of my mother. Bobby more than Margaret.
Bobby Dooley, she is the president of the Homeowners Association.
Yes, mm-hmm. She's a very sociopathic. Yeah.
And Bobby would look at you, Christine, just look you up and down like, who does she think she is? Mm-hmm. She wouldn't necessarily say that. She'd say, oh God, I love that skirt, you know. But she's thinking,
you
know, immediate competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a sort of suburban Nazi thing to her. She's very popular. We've got a new download of hers on our website, in fact. And
yeah, now, you're, now
she has
your
like
website.
3,000 followers on Twitter. It's nuts.
I was going to say, philhendryshow.com. Bobby Dooley has her own blog.
Yes, Bobby has her own blog because Steve and the boys... Bobby's
very tragic, you know. Steve is my husband, and we talk about Christmas, and the boys are all... She thinks her sons are the greatest in the world. Actually, they've been arrested for spray-painting swastikas on synagogues. They're the worst fucking kids. And she thinks they're just... You know, they're boys. What do you think boys are going to do? Yeah, okay, sure, lady.
Now, you even have... Okay, you have... Let me just throw it out to the audience. You have either 2 dozen, 3 dozen, or 5 dozen characters.
I've got... I thought I'd probably have 3 dozen characters, but on I would say a functional, you know, go-to characters, probably about 20.
That's a lot of people, man.
Yeah, well, you know, you sort of just start a character by hearing things and then mimicking. Like, I heard Gary Spivey, who was a did horoscopes in the Southeast, and Gary sounds like this. Gary Spivey here with your astrology. He sounded Southern, but he had that Al Gore lisp, you know, Al Gore. Yeah. And here in Nashville, there's nothing gay about him, you know. But I thought
it's a lateral list.
It's a lateral list. But I thought it sounded like kind of a butch gay guy. So I thought, I think I'll make him Doug Danger, gay man, gay journalist. And I turned Doug into a very butch and aggressive and political gay guy. So Doug, don't you bring gay topics up with me, man. I may be a gay reporter, but I'm talking about, like, he'll say things like, I went into the store the other day. I said to the kid, give me a pack. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Give me a pack of Marlboro Lights. And the kid gave me that rolled eye look. So I grabbed him, pinned him up against the cigarette rack. I said, you going homophobe on me? Huh? You know.
And then people call into the show, and they're like, I don't care if you're
Who cares if you're gay?
Or a gay journalist. Yeah. Quit saying that. And then you immediately say, I'm a gay man.
I'm a gay. You know I'm gay, right? Yeah, that's one of the things. I don't care. You said you're gay about 100 times. Well, you know, okay, but you know I'm gay, right? Yes, I know you're gay 58 times. Okay, what a homophobe.
And then all of a sudden, Phil Hendry pipes in, and then you're yelling at the first character who's yelling at the second character, and it gets very convoluted.
Well, I'm actually, there's generally only one character on the air with me at the time, and I'll always take the side of the caller. I'm always taking the side of the audience because the guy we have is obviously way over the top and completely insane.
How do you have a character who's a child molester and he's friendly?
Yes.
How's that happen?
His name is, I'll tell you why. And I said this to people. I said, I don't get it, but it's got to be the first child molester character that's a popular comic character. And my name, and I think the reason is the character's name is Herb Sewell, you see. And he does
he
that kind of shit.
Well. He
yes.
Very...
Mother, you know, he's got his mother issue. He was at Atascadero for 8 years and had insulin shock therapy, and he's just fucked up. And his best friend is Walter Bellhaven, wonderful man, great card player, great lectures on botany up at Atascadero. But it turns out the guy's got, you know, there's bodies they still haven't found.
Right,
you know,
right,
this
right.
is what this guy's story is. You know? And his wife, Bunny, that's his wife's name, Bunny Bellhaven. She just fought for possession of a skull from Alameda County. It belongs to Walter. And Alameda County lost the case because they can't prove who it is. So they don't know, you know.
Oh.
It's insane, you know.
Now, some of these characters and some of these situations, they're coming straight out of the news. I mean, is there? There's no better way to incense people than to say, go from the truth, right?
Than to go from an organic truth. Sometimes it isn't in the news. Sometimes it's women drying their nails. I got a great bit one time about Bobby. You know, I just came from getting my nails done and they're wet. So our girl is Amparo and I asked her to come in to the bathroom. Okay. And Bobby's got that. Okay. And I asked her if she would assist me in, you know, wiping myself. Is that so terrible? You know, you're like, Jesus. So you can, oh, please don't, what, grow up, you know. So she's asking this really disgusting thing. And, of course, women are calling. Don't you understand that that's very personal? You should have a nurse. All I'm at, my nails are wet. Well, that's my mom, in a nutshell. My mother was like that.
Wow.
Weird, inappropriate, and then when you called her on it, she'd look at you like, what's your problem? You know,
how
my
she,
problem.
How old is your mom now?
My mother's gone. She's like,
she is gone.
My
I
mother
see.
Would. My mother died in 2006 at the age of 92.
Oh, wow. Isn't that amazing?
My folks were like, World War II, Depression era peoples.
Yeah.
And I think of my mother now, Marjorie, and I loved her, you know, as a little boy. She was like, you know, little boys and their moms, you know. But I grew distant from her as I grew up, and I have to say it had a lot to do with her and how she treated me, you know. But my father I loved very much. He was the one that gave me my moral compass, I think. My dad was the guy that would say, don't give a wino too much money because they'll buy enough booze to kill themselves with it. He would just, because he worked downtown. He used to get hit up by these poor men on Skid Row and things like that. You know, my father.
But don't you always wonder when one parent's crazy, the other one doesn't seem to be crazy, but they married a crazy person. So you're like,
my father,
what is it that I'm not seeing about him? I'm not trying to insult your father. I'm just saying I've had these issues myself.
Oh, I think it's true.
How did these two end up together?
Yeah.
Because it's like one of them is obviously nutty. The other one has to be secretly nutty.
I think both my parents were really... My father, I think, was bipolar. My mother, I think, was severely depressed. Probably was molested as a girl. I'm pretty
sure. Can I just tell you, I heard you on Paul Gilmartin's The Mentally Ill Happy Hour.
Yeah.
He has a good show, Paul Gilmartin. I've talked to him a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah.
He keeps saying he's going to be on the show. I've asked him three
Paul,
times.
Paul, you got to do the show.
Well,
do Christine's
crazy.
Show.
You can't trust him.
Yeah,
well,
you crazy actually, son of a bitch.
I'm not gonna, but anyway, he'll be on the show. But the point is, you went on that show, and you really opened up. And a lot of people do open up when they go on that show. And they talk about a lot of personal stuff. And you did that, Phil. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of, you know, and I brought the topic women to this one because it all kind of goes down to that, you know. I mean, my mother warped my view of women for a long time. And, and I had to go from being a good boy. Gee, what was I doing wrong that I don't love my mother?
Right.
You know, why, what am I doing wrong? Oh, I got to be a good boy. And then I got out of that and I went into just this aggressive fucking, I'm going to fuck everything that moves.
Right.
And then as I got older, I thought, I want to woman to be a friend of mine, you know.
Isn't
I got
that
something
amazing how our parents can shape us. Even though she's passed away, you can still work on your relationship with her, and she's
that's
not even here.
That's the fucking thing, man. And I've said women because that's been the one I've really had to work out,
sure.
You know. And men have always been easy to get along with men.
But at least you look at it. See, there's people, there's men that don't look at a lot of men and women who don't look at their parents. They get defensive if you talk about them. They don't want to speak poorly of them or bad of them because they think they did the best they could at the time and what they had.
To which I always answer, even if you cut someone with a knife by accident,
I know.
It still fucking bleeds and hurts.
Right.
You know?
In
and
other
you
words, it doesn't take away from the fact that it happened. And so we still have to ramify.
I know it was an accident, but you got to fucking watch what you're doing with that knife, man.
Yeah.
You know, you just cut me with it. And,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It is amazing. I think Paul's show is really good for that because he really gets down to some truths that a lot of listeners share. people aren't necessarily always calling in or asking, but they hear it, man.
The thing that happened on that show was that you don't hear about men. Men never bring up the possibility that they were inappropriately treated by their mothers.
Right.
When we did that show, suddenly he starts getting emails from guys.
No kidding.
That happened to me.
Yeah.
I've been on the verge of suicide. I have this and some guy was going to get into a tub and open up a vein. I mean, you know, it's fucking terrible stuff.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and men are quiet about that. What we do, because it's not manly not to be able to handle a woman, we internalize it and we go through all the shit that I went through, man. Be a good boy. Why don't I love my mother? To I'll be an animal and just fuck all these broads and I don't give a shit about any of them.
Yes, you try every different avenue.
Every different avenue until finally you go... You know, I like sex, but I also like I want to have love in my life, and I want to have a family. And
I want a friend.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't want to take it out on every woman that I meet, you know?
I don't want to have to just take care of her or her take care of me. Let's just be normal, and everybody just love one another without this pressure of complete me, I'll complete you.
Yeah, bullshit. That is such shit, isn't it?
It's hard, isn't it? Now, this wasn't your first
wife. You know, the completion cycle is necessary, Christine. I can see you're rejecting that.
Is this Margaret?
We'll be right back.
Is this Margaret?
No, that's a gay, that's transgender, I think.
By the way,
I don't know what that guy
was. Completion cycle sounds like a sex book to me.
It's either that or the washing machine.
Yes, the washing machine is an integral part of the sex book that I'm talking about.
Margaret would say, if she were here, she'd say, Phil, I understand what you're talking about, but do you understand? And I know she's laughing, and that's fine.
That's her own.
Because I still think you're lovely in that skirt, and Bobby, you wouldn't say that.
Yes, did you buy that in Forever 21?
Mm-hmm. I like that. No, I would say to you, Phil, the following thing. Are you saying that, did your mother touch your penis? Did she...
You know, and she whispers things like...
Phil, like, I don't want the audience to hear. I just want to talk to you. Did she touch your dick?
Margaret, they can hear you. All they have to do is turn their radio up. Well, I don't want to scream it. You know.
Now wipe my ass.
Yeah.
How about Father McCarter? Is it McCarter?
Father James McCarter's
Catholicism. Catholic Irishman.
Right. I had a Monsignor at Holy Angels in Arcadia, which is right down the one.
Where you grew up.
It's where I grew up. And our Monsignor O'Keefe. Was his name.
How did you need a Monsignor? Don't you just have the priest? Why did you have the bigger one?
We had a heavy hitter parish. Holy Angels is right across the street from Santa Anita Racetrack. And it's even mentioned in the Seabiscuit book.
When one
of the jockeys was hurt severely on Seabiscuit in one of the races in the 30s, he was brought over to the chapel at Holy Angels for some kind of last rites, maybe. Or, you know, maybe the priest there knew how to set a bone. I don't know what. But that was a big parish. And Father Monsignor O'Keefe had been there since 1948 and had accrued this power base in L.A. County. He was tight with Cardinal McIntyre. He got by the time I met him, I'm a little 10-year-old kid, and there he is with the three-corner, with the ball on top, just... Now, you boys...
And kiss the ring. It was like a...
Well, no, you didn't have to do that, you know. But you always got that gentle waft of a little bit of Johnny Walker on his breath. You just got, good morning, boys.
Did he sweat?
Like, yeah, man. Oh, yeah, he sweat and spit.
Ew.
Big, rosy-cheeked Irishman.
I can see this man.
Right.
I can see him with a pink face.
He's got the Irish busted capillaries in the face. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, the veins all through the nose. Yeah.
Ew.
The gin blossom nose.
Now, you boy, no molestation shit. That never happened to me at all growing up in Arcadia.
That's good.
Yeah, which, you know, to hear people talk now, says, you get your dick sucked when? When you were 10 or what? Like, no, it never happened. I don't doubt that it did happen, though.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that it did happen.
So do you ever feel like maybe you're like,
I was missing out on something?
Why
exactly.
You were the one.
Well, that's another reason I'm depressed.
The priest is like, that's okay. Yeah. I don't need to.
No, not today, Phil. You there, little boy. You in the back there.
Yeah, no, I...
Phil just won't shut up.
Yeah.
I just can't. Irish accent.
But Father McCarter's and I got the accent of Father McCarter's watching Anthony Hopkins in a movie called The Bounty where he played Captain Bly. Anthony Hopkins. I don't know if you remember Anthony Hopkins. He played a sea captain, so a man of the sea, and he did this thing. You'll clean up the ship and yourselves. And you can almost be like, wow, that's fucking... Yeah, I'm on the ship, you know. And so Father McCarter's.
And when you do that voice, I see your mouth almost turning inward. It's almost like you're sucking it in.
You are. You're sucking it in because, you've been sucking a lot during your lifetime.
You're also sucking in your emotions.
I'm sucking in my emotions. I'm sucking in dicks.
Listen. Would you like to play some Shotgun Story Worthy?
Right on.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy,
the game show where contestants spin the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tell a true one-minute story on the topic they land.
So everyone, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
School days. Well, one-minute story about school days is, oh, man, just going to school and having the brother, I'll never forget Brother Giles saying to me one day as we were talking in ethics class, because I went to Catholic school, and he would say that I was talking to my friend Rob Thyssen, and Brother Giles went, "You, Thyssen, out of the classroom for talking in class. Henry, your friend just got kicked out on account of your big mouth. How do you feel?" And so it all happened rapid fire like that. So suddenly Thyssen and I are talking. He gets kicked out. "Henry, your friend Thyssen got kicked out. How do you feel?" You know, and it's something like, "How does that make you feel?" I that's what I thought. So this was the rapid fire thing I grew up with. And also the same guy, Rob Thyssen, is a dear friend of mine, is now a multimillionaire in Florida. He is. He and I were wrestling once in the back of the class, and this Christian brother took a piece of chalk and threw it on a spiral. I mean, it was like a bullet. And hit me right in the back of the head. So those are the two things that I remember. And I think we all had it coming, because we would do things like outside the classroom window was a ledge with that faux rock on it. And one day we took all the chairs and desks from the class and put them out there and just stood there in the classroom. The brother came and said, "Okay, go out and get them." You know, so there was joyous, fun frivolity growing up my school days.
Oh, no, that was a great story. I don't care what it was, man.
We're
gonna
have to scrap the whole podcast because he went over a minute. Oh my gosh. Oh, the rules are the rules.
All right, let me ask you a question. If you really could do anything you want, I mean, look, you do a lot. I mean, obviously the voiceovers alone must be so much fun. I mean, when you get asked to do things like Futurama, South Park,
King of the Hill. I mentioned King of the Hill.
King of the Hill.
Those guys were so much fun to work for, Mike and those guys.
Christy Mann Stratton has been on the show a couple of times. She was an executive producer over there.
Yeah.
And I hated how King of the Hill just, like, went away.
There was
no big fanfare that it went away. It just went away.
I know, but...
And Brittany Murphy passed away,
Horrible. That was a terrible shock because she was a very nice person.
Luann.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she was nice. That's what I was...
Very nice lady and always was very nice to me and always made a point of saying, "Hi, Phil, how you doing?" And
sure.
Same thing with Hillary Duff's sister. Is it Haley? Haley worked with us on Napoleon Dynamite.
Right.
And she was a terrific person to work with. People that don't walk into the room as a star. You know, Brendan Fraser was on King of the Hill and came into the record room with us and worked with us. I always loved that about that show. And so I would love to do an animated thing as good as that.
Such a strong show. Yeah, King of the Hill was so
really
strong.
Really strong, man. But, you know, how many of those are there? So
how about Dale? That was a great voice. Dale.
That was Johnny Hardwick.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Johnny was a Texan, a friend of Mike's, part of that kind of Texas Albuquerque
Mike White.
Posse. Mike Judge.
Sorry, yes.
The writer and creator, right. As well as Beavis and Butthead. And Johnny was part of that sort of New Mexico, Texas posse that Mike brought out here with him.
Bunch of good character.
Great characters.
Can I just
funny
tell you
guy.
My favorite joke ever from King of the Hill, which was the wife is afraid that Hank Hill's going to have a heart attack, and they're at a buffet, and she goes, he goes, he's having brisket and he's having ribs. She goes, "Have some vegetables." He goes, "All right. Give me some macaroni and cheese." I was like, "That's Texas. I'm sure that's Wisconsin. That's every place in between California and New York."
It's really true.
That's it.
In Pittsburgh, in the winter, I grew up in Pittsburgh, and then in the winter, if you wanted fruit, my mom would say, "No, there is no fruit. Fruit is out of season. Just fruit."
Yes, yes. Yeah, I have friends back east who are like that. Yeah, yeah. I have friends back east, and they'll say, "God, I want to come back to California for nothing else than to have some vegetables and some fruit and to eat like a human being."
Now, what about being a Modern Family?
Oh, just
were you
great
asked, did they write that for you?
Because no, I auditioned for that. There was a character, Booker Bell. I auditioned for it, and I got it. And New Girl brought me on and didn't audition me, which is
That's a treat. Good. I'm shocked, though, that you were auditioned by Modern Family. Just because here's why I say that. Because, of course, you're playing a radio personality, Booker Bell.
Yeah.
And I say that because guys like Ed O'Neill and some of the stars on that show, that's a well-oiled machine over there now.
Yeah,
but these guys, you are who they love. Like, in other words, Somebody asked me today, who is Phil Hendry? Somebody who didn't know who you were. And I said, let me tell you who he is. Phil Hendry's who Jimmy Kimmel loves. He's who David Letterman loves. Like, the big guys until love
I,
you.
Until I gave Jimmy shit one day on the air.
Really? You know, well, tell us about that.
It was bad. I mean, I said that Crank Yankers was a lift of my show, and that got... Jimmy understandably got upset, and so I apologized to him. And
well, there's been phone humor forever.
And now he's got a show on ABC, and you know, there's
starting at 11:35.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Look, I just got to say, see, this is Hollywood for you. So they're like, somebody gets a call, they say, I got an audition for Modern Family. I'm going to be a radio guy. Awesome. And they walk in and they look at the audition sheet and they see Phil Hendry. And they're like,
oh, well, that
fuck
happens to
me.
Well,
there's no way I'm getting this job.
Well, right. The same, you know, but you don't want to think that way. I just did an audition.
I know that you don't want to think that way, but it's like, this happened.
Well, I did
me,
the
like,
same thing. I walked on an audition a couple of weeks ago, and there was Tom Arnold. Yeah. And I was thinking, oh,
yeah.
You know, he's
I was supposed to do a German accent, right? And I walk in, and sitting there is Kenneth Mars. Kenneth Mars is the guy from the original Producers, who is the guy who writes Springtime for Hitler.
Yeah.
He is the ultimate comic German accent world.
I'll tell you a good one.
I
did voiceovers in the 80s, and God rest his soul, you'd walk in an office and see Burgess Meredith coming out.
Wow.
Burgess Meredith is not only a great actor, but his voiceover was fantastic.
Right.
Know? I mean, it was just like,
but
the new Mercedes-Benz, you know.
Oh, it's like butter.
Oh, beautiful.
Beauty. Yeah. Kevin Spacey
get
has
up,
that voice
Mercedes-Benz, get
Kevin
up.
Spacey.
Kevin Spacey has that voice to me.
But then on the other end of the stick, there was a thing, an article in the paper not too long ago saying, what are these fucking actors taking all these jobs away from voice people? Because there's a Burgess Meredith.
I read that article. I know that article.
Yeah, there's a Burgess Meredith out there. There's also, you know, Ed Harris. I love Ed Harris. I think he's a great actor. As a voiceover guy, I don't know.
Right, John Hamm does Mercedes. And John Hamm, I love Mad Men. I love him. But his voice is not, I have to strain to listen. I know it's John Hamm.
I wouldn't know it was him.
Huh.
Yeah.
So why are they paying millions of dollars to hire these guys? Well, I think it's because advertisers love to go and have lunch with these
guys. Well,
cats,
and also a lot of the foreign markets, you know, like Japan, and they love, who doesn't want it? I mean, look at Bill Murray Lost in Translation.
Oh, that was
a very, very true
scenario. That's a very true
scenario. That's actually being in the commercial. We're talking about, it's like the voice.
But it's the same idea is what I'm saying, if you can get Kevin Spacey to do your ad, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't want to offend Mr. Spacey, but I would sit there saying, I'm paying this guy a high six figures to do this out of my budget, and really, what's it going to do for me exactly?
Well, the thing is, like, who is really, even if you love Kevin Spacey, and if he went on camera and endorsed the product, you would buy it. He's not on camera endorsing the product.
That's
He's doing
thing.
The voiceover.
Talking voiceover.
You might or might not realize it's John Hamm or Kevin Spacey, who, of course, are right now both having sex with models on a pile of cash while we're sitting here to disrupt, you know.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, good for them.
But, I mean, that is good for them. But I am saying there's a bunch of people that make their bread and butter out of voiceover.
That's exactly right.
You know, but I don't know what it is, man. I remember when the Simpsons guys went on strike, and I heard the comments out of some of the producers saying, psh, I can get anybody to voice this goddamn show. We don't need them.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, that was the attitude, you know.
Yeah, you can't get Harry Shearer. You just can't pick him up.
When I was a little kid, and they changed the voice of Barney Rubble on Flintstones, man, I knew it right away.
Whoa. Kermit the Frog is still not the same.
Kermit the
Frog is dead to me.
That ain't Barney. Who's that? You know, because the original
Barney. I had that problem with the new Darren on Bewitched.
Yes!
But that was in an actor
that's
way.
That's a character.
That's where they went, you know what? You are so fucking unimportant.
Also,
they just get a cutout of the original guy and have some BAA read his lines.
Also, how about the new Chris on the Partridge Family? What a bunch of bullshit was that?
Her name on the daughter on Roseanne?
What if they just got a brand new on Modern Family, a brand new Ed O'Neill,
and it was
Alan Thicke.
Hey, listen.
Woo!
Truly, the Modern Family, is that not a well-oiled machine?
It's a great show.
I mean, these guys are on the top of their game.
Yeah, you know you're on a good show when everybody is happy and when everybody is sweet and treats you just like one of the crew, and that's what happened on Modern Family. And Ed O'Neill, if I could just tell you.
Please.
As soon as you said, well, the first thing that happened to me was when I sat in the makeup chair, Ed was down here, and I just said to the makeup person, I need a connection for my iPhone. And Ed O'Neill, he said, you need an iPhone? Can I got one in my, you know, I got one.
What a good
man. I said, thank you, Mr. O'Neill. I don't know you. My name is Phil Hendry. I'm working with you. Oh, yeah, you're Booker Bellens. We sat down, and he and I talked about David Mamet, who he worked with, and we talked about, he grew up in Youngstown, Pennsylvania. He told me about this character that he grew up listening to, this Booker Bellens.
Wow.
We talked about, he says to me, something about, have you seen the show such and such? I said, not really. Yeah, I don't know what to think about that, you know.
Wow. So he was like a friend.
Great guy.
Talking to you like a friend.
Everybody.
When he was on Married with Children, the best thing about him, he was the same guy on the first show as the 100th show or whatever. It was the same character.
Yeah. He's a New York trained stage actor.
That's
he was a dramatic actor, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I mean, he was not a comedy actor. And so I seem to remember some interview where he was like, he went in the interview, I'm never going to get this. It's a crazy, wacky sitcom. I'm like, Mammoth. I'm never going to get this. But he could embody the completely defeated middle-aged man.
And during the scene, the director would come over and say something, and I'd see Ed say, oh, yeah, that's right. He'd use some actor term that I forgot. You know, one of these fucking actors, I don't know shit about it. You know?
Backstory, something.
No, he said, oh, yeah, that's right. There's a beat there. You know, he says, there's a beat, so I got to... And I'm like going, oh, fuck, this cat knows a lot of stuff. I don't even know shit about beats. All I know is coming in and going, hi, you know.
I love the term cat, by the way. You have really great lingo. I love
your... That's my old...
You have really good language. You do. Sometimes you say things on the show like, man, that cat had no idea what... And I was like, yeah, man, fuck that shit. I love that.
Well, that was back when I grew up in that era, the hippie thing.
Cool.
I'm one of the last of the hippies. Oh,
yeah,
thanks.
You are kind of a hippie.
Well, the other thing I loved is jazz. We used to go up here to North Hollywood to Lancashire and Dante's. Yeah. I went to jazz and I listened to a lot of jazz and I wanted to be.
Did you ever go to Moe's? The Moe's right there and right there on Lancashire as well.
On Riverside?
I did not go
Riverside,
to Moe's.
On Riverside.
No, I didn't. Went to Dante's. Went to Shelley's Manhole.
What about the baked potato?
Baked potato, yeah. Baked potato came along a little later, and I think they had some. But when you went out to Shelley's Manhole, or you went to Shelley's,
which is now a different place down in West Hollywood.
It's on Cahuenga. Yeah, exactly.
Oddly enough, parking in the rear. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm here all week. Thank you.
And I'm Shelley. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
And then the lighthouse out in Hermosa Beach, which one night, I loved it. One night I heard some cat. I was seeing Kenny Burrell as a guitar player. And, of course, jazz guys, they dress, they're in their suit. Gorgeous.
Look good, man.
Silk suit. And there's Kenny Burrell with a beautiful Gibson axe. And he's just... Yeah. And there's a guy in the back just going, wah! I can't do it with, you know...
Yeah.
He's just, yahoo! Yahoo! That's beautiful jazz.
That's
beautiful jazz. That's not that loud stuff. It was just some drunk. And there's Burrell just laughing to himself and just... I never seen crowds or people react like
that's
that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And the lighthouse. Well, the lighthouse is a tricky gig because I've done comedy there, and it's a huge bar.
Is it out Hermosa Beach?
Yeah, and it's a huge bar. And
yeah.
It's not really good for a stage setting at all.
No.
So he must have been tucked away.
Do
in
they
that
do
corner.
Jazz there still?
I don't know.
It used to be a great. It was like a big trip for us to go out there. And back in those days, and I say this without any pride at all. I mean, you know, we drove drunk, we drove stoned, we were high on God, you know, a mixture of chemicals.
It was,
it was a different era.
And now when you think of your kids, you think like, oh, please don't do what I did.
Yeah, and of course they ever have every right to say, but you did
with
the
like
same
no airbags and like just a lap bolt, which you probably didn't put on.
Yeah.
And like, as Jay Leno says, you know, the instrument panel's like Bowie knives, you know, like 5 feet to, before you hit the thing.
I lost a friend, in Pasadena to a head on, into a tree when he was 16. But we went down that same road in my buddy's GTO at about 90, a narrow, winding road in Pasadena. I shouldn't be alive.
It's
what
unbelievable.
The hell, you know?
Isn't it scary when you think back of like what you did, what you got through?
How did you
live that? Why did you make it and they didn't? That's terrifying.
I'm not comparing myself to a veteran, but they say that about combat veterans. There's a thing called survivor's guilt.
Sure, survivor's guilt.
Every time you talk to one of those guys, they say, I don't know why I'm here. I've said for the longest time I didn't know why I was here because of those guys. And that's what you have to find, the meaning in your life.
Well, just go off on the top.
I hate to be maudlin,
but
you know.
Survivor's guilt is like, you know, my brother's schizophrenic. Oh. And it's like, you get it with that too. You're like, what the...
I know. Hannes,
how did I dodge that bullet?
Yeah, but you bring it up frequently. Hannes is like, how can I complain when my brother is fucking living in
it,
right?
It's a biochemical
problem. Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's a subject for another time. All right, death and mental illness.
Yes,
let's wrap up the comedy podcast right now.
By the way, Bobby Dooley has a cut. I'm serious. She has a cut on our new download called Dachau.
And how does that sound?
Bobby goes to Germany. Well, anyway, Steve and I are going to be going to Germany for our... It's going to be a wonderful vacation. It's just, that's great. Yeah, we looked at the brochure. We're going to go to Dachau. Then we have a box lunch. Then we go to the Black Forest. It's just... Well, now, Bobby, don't you... You know what Dachau is.
It's where they killed and murdered.
Yeah, so here's the sociopathy that comes in with a Bobby. It's where they murdered people, Bobby.
Yes, I know. I saw that in the brochure. It's very interesting.
So there's, hello, who's in there? You know,
and she goes on about a box lunch.
And the lady, yeah, and the lady calls up and says, "Ma'am, I've been to Dachau. You don't understand. You may not have the stomach for a box.
Well, we don't. You know, it's a $10.95 value.
The box lunch.
So yeah, we gotta get a box. And there's Steve in the background. We gotta get a box lunch and then go down Black Forest.
Well, you can go to the Black Forest, do whatever you want, man. You're coming out of freaking die, you know.
I did that because I had seen something that day. We did that because I'd seen something that day of people who are sort of disconnected. The later the generations, of course, people are not as connected to that. As my generation, my parents were World War II people. So I heard this and immediately, but now it's people are, yeah, I heard about what the Nazis did and stuff. That's bad.
Boy.
But there's no real, you know. So here's Bobby just, yes, Dachau. There's a bunch of big names. I don't know what they are. What's the other one, Steve?
Oh, one called Auschwitz or Auschwitz or something.
Auschwitz.
Yeah, is there one kind of Eisenwitz or no, Auschwitz? That's it. Yes, we're gonna go. Are we going there?
Yeah, hopefully.
Oh, great.
As long as it's on the way to the Black Forest.
Yeah, as long as they're getting their $10.95 box lunch in their coach fucking thing, you know.
Wow. You guys, ladies and gentlemen, we got to wrap this up, but I cannot thank our storyteller tonight, Phil Hendry, enough. You really, this is very touching to me.
Thank you for having me here.
I've been listening for years and years, and I'm such a fan. I'm a huge fan. By the way,
I'm a fan too, you know.
Johannes is a fan too.
I'm not wearing the hot dress, so it's okay. You don't have to look at me.
But I will real quick, we met because we were at a party together, right?
Yes.
At Premier Radio at the Beverly.
And I was married at the time.
Wilshire. I was married.
Well,
I
say then what
I was.
I wanted so bad.
I know, but I was married too.
I didn't do it.
We were at the valet together. We spent some time in the smoking area.
Yeah.
I didn't smoke.
Oh, this is getting hotter.
I didn't smoke either.
I was smoking.
You were smoking.
Yes.
I didn't smoke.
Yeah.
We talked.
Yes, we did.
Talked, and he lit. He just like Phil Henry or Paul Henry in Dark Victory.
Paul Henry, yeah.
Henry, yes. Yeah. He lit two cigarettes at once and then gave one to you as if you were Betty Davis, and he went, "What the fuck are you doing?" Because you never watch black and white movies.
It's a lot of fun, though, to watch the valet area because you see a lot of fancy cars. People are coming and going. I enjoy the valet area.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, this is the guy, Hannes, who does our theme song, Follow Me.
Yeah, I never heard of him.
Well, I've heard of him. He's a rock star. He's out there touring with Cowboy Mouth, so check him out. I'd also like to thank Joe Slepsky. Joe Slepsky is a guy who helps us produce the show. Did you know that, Hannes?
Yes, and big reality star.
Oh, for
reality
goodness sake.
Show star.
It's true. He was on Collection Obsessives.
No. Collection Intervention on Sci-Fi?
Because he has a crazy collection
on
of
sci-fi?
Comic books.
Yeah,
Sci-Fi. On Sci-Fi,
so
check it out.
They had an intervention of comic books with this guy.
Yes,
that's new.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
And they lied and lied and lied and tried to make Joe and his lovely bride-to-be or something, whatever she is, look crazy.
But they weren't crazy. But you played along well. You did a good job. All right, you guys, I'd also like to thank Jorge Reyes. Jorge Reyes, he's our sound engineer. Thank you, friend.
Never heard of him. Oh, there he is.
And, of course, on behalf of our storyteller, Phil Hendry. Sir, thank you.
Thank you for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
And, of course, you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, Slicinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.